Good morning. Welcome to the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM, where you have the power to have your voice heard, the power to inform, to become informed from local to global on the issues you care about most on your hometown morning talk show, wherever your hometown may be. And we have the usual Commodore 64 issues going on this morning, but we've overcome them. And we are ready to proceed. Florida Governor Rick Scott officially defies Justice Department, vows to continue voter purge. In a letter sent tonight, Florida Governor Rick Scott said the state will continue to purge registered voters from the rolls despite the Department of Justice's warning that the effort is illegal. The Miami Herald reports the letter all but dares the Justice Department to sue Florida for allegedly violating the 1965 Voting Rights Act and the 1993 National Voter Registration Act. The full letter is available. Well, Governor Scott, it's not surprising that he is defiant. In fact, he is so defiant that he actually believes that hair will grow on his head in 2016. That's right. Charlie Crist has nothing on Governor Scott. Governor Scott will not only grow hair by 2016, he will also obtain a tan. Well, he's not the only Florida congressman or Florida politician that is a little bit defiant over the whole thing. In fact, he's almost moderate compared to Attorney General Eric Holder's opposition, Congressman Tom Rooney. Tom Rooney accuses Attorney General Eric Holder of supporting voter fraud in Florida. According to Rooney, Holder is assisting in voter fraud, which is a crime, for the purpose of, quote, aiding the president's reelection campaign. Unlike Republicans that want to remove minorities, African Americans, Hispanics, independents from the voter rolls. He says Holder is actively working to enable voter fraud and allow illegal immigrants to cast votes in the state of Florida. Last week, the Justice Department informed the state of Florida that the large purge of registered voters ordered by Governor Scott was illegal and should be ended. More from Rooney's letter to Eric Holder. Florida has uncovered a widespread problem of illegal and erroneous voter registration, exposing as many as 182,000 registered voters as non-U.S. citizens. Amazing. Amazing, I say. The Department of Justice has an obligation to work with the state to prevent voter fraud and ensure the illegal voters are not cast. Yet your department has consistently obstructed Florida's efforts and has been either unresponsive or outright hostile to legitimate requests for information. 182,000. My goodness. Your actions further demonstrate that the Department of Justice, under your leadership, is more concerned with protecting the re-election prospects of the president than with upholding justice and enforcing the rule of law. Sad day. Just a sad day for Florida. Asked Representative Rooney. Well, his belief that 182,000 registered voters in Florida have been identified as non-U.S. citizens, well, even Governor Scott doesn't quite go there. Thus far, the governor has only forwarded 2,700 names for county election officials to purge from the rolls. Let's see. I went to public school, but I'm pretty sure I can figure this one out. 182,000 sounds to me like a bigger number than 2,700 names. In fact, seems quite a bit bigger. Among the much smaller list, local officials have found hundreds of fully eligible U.S. citizens. So the number is smaller than 2,700. But Mr. Rooney, he knows there's 182,000 out there. He said it many times. So it must be true. As a result of the rampant errors, the Justice Department letter declaring the purge illegal, not to mention the fact that all 67 county election supervisors, including many Republicans, have decided to suspend the process. Must be a, you would think 182,000, that would be a very productive process. Further, Rooney's assertion that voter fraud is a widespread problem is contradicted by Florida election officials and law enforcement data. The state of Florida has until today to formally respond to the Justice Department. Of course, that letter that Governor Scott is composing, probably as we speak, explaining how they plan to defy the Department of Justice and press forward. They will continue. There seems to be more to this story, and the voter fraud. It is extremely rare in Florida. In fact, you're more likely to get hit by a bolt of lightning. I, for one, am not above swinging a golf club in a thunderstorm on a lightning-filled day. But I have yet to be hit by a bolt of lightning. I also play the lotto, which I guess is even more likely to be, less likely, I guess I should say, to be hit by a bolt of lightning. According to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, 178 cases of alleged voter fraud have been referred to the department since 2000. To be fair, elections seem to happen only once every 2 years, so we're talking about 5 election cycles. 5 divided into 178, let's see, 5 into 17, goes 3 times, carry the 2, 28 times 5, so we're talking, what, 35 cases a year? Ian Sancho, the 24-year veteran election supervisor in Leon County, who we have talked to quite often on this show, said it simply isn't much of an issue. You're more likely to walk out of your office and get hit by a bolt of lightning. Since 2004 removed a signature requirement for absentee ballots, the state has not prosecuted anyone for absentee ballot fraud. Similarly, reforms adopted in the wake of the state's 2000 recount required counties to use optical scan voting machines, created statewide standard for recount, and provided $2 million for a centralized voter database, again reducing instances of abuse. There are more than 11 million voters registered in Florida. Department of Justice asked Florida to end its current voter purge, as we have said. Open phone lines at 941-745-1490, 941-745-1490. There's much more in the news besides Governor Scott and his voter purge and his hope for the return of his hair and Rogaine by 2016. You're live on the air.
Hey, Henry, it's Ken.
Yes.
Here's the numbers that I heard reported by the Miami Herald. The state started out with over 180,000 non-citizens illegally on the voter rolls. They whittled that number down to somewhere around 2,700. And of that 2,700, 1,600 were in the Miami-Dade County area. So when the Miami Herald looked at these numbers and looked at these people on the voter rolls, they found that most on this list of 1,600 were actually citizens. 500 of those people on that list were actually citizens. So that's the accuracy of the state's voter database, that one-third of at least one-third of the voters named are actually citizens. And also on that list, 13 were identified as non-citizens who said, you know what, I'm not a citizen, take me off the list. And two of those had may have actually voted in state elections, and the state attorney is going to look into those cases. The question is if you said this, I think, if voter fraud has been so rampant in the state of Florida, if the state of Florida since 2006 has been solely responsible for maintaining the voter database, where are the prosecutions for all of this voter fraud? What has the State Division of Elections been doing since 2006 to maintain a proper and accurate voter log? It's not the responsibility of the Department of Homeland Security. It's the state says it's their responsibility to do it. Where is the accurate voter list? Obviously, it's not accurate. And where are the prosecutions for these people who are illegally on the list?
Well, I have an answer for that.
All right.
But before I give the answer, you know, one of the other unfair things of this is it's not like an opt-in. It is you are opted out until you choose to respond to a letter to opt yourself back in.
Right.
So it's a situation where people are removed, and then they must get themselves back on the list.
Right.
But I think the answer is obvious as far as the where the time has been spent, and that is in the testing of the many hair replacement products that Governor Scott is hoping to use for his 2016 election.
Well, yeah, and you ought to check out the tanning system that John Boehner is using. Henry, I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thank you. If anybody else has something to say about the Florida voter poll purge, please give us a call at 941-745-1490. Quite a bit of other news, as you might guess, and as tends to be the want on this show, or habit on this show, is we just can't resist a good nuclear power story, or even the poor ones. Unit 1 at Susquehanna Nuclear Plant returns to service following outage. Unit 1 at Susquehanna Nuclear Power Plant in Luzerne County, Pennsylvania. Amazing how Pennsylvania has just the nuclear power problem area of the United States. Well, I guess we have more than one. Resumed generating electricity for customers Thursday, June 7th, after a scheduled refueling and maintenance outage. Plant operator PPL Susquehanna LLC also announced that it has found no turbine blade cracks on Unit 2, which much make many of the Susquehanna residents feel even better, which was shut down May 30th for inspection based on discovery of cracks on some Unit 1 unit turbine blades, which were replaced during the just completed outage. Have you noticed a pattern here of these aging nuclear power plants with their cracks in the cooling rods, in the cracks in the containment vessels, in the cracks in the blades? And have you also noticed the continued push to reinstate them for another 20 or 40 years? So they crack and they damage themselves and they create problems in their normal 30 to 40 year authorization. But we should have confidence that they can go another 30 or 40 years with so little maintenance and so little need for concern. U.S. nuclear submarine fire linked to vacuum cleaner. Well, almost anybody could have figured that one out. A fire that caused an estimated $400 million in damage to a U.S. Navy nuclear-powered submarine docked in Maine may have been caused by a vacuum cleaner, authorities said on Wednesday. The fire in the forward compartment, which includes crew living, command, and control spaces, and the torpedo room, I guess all those old World War II movies about the fire in the hole can come true still, of the USS Miami crew living on May 23rd took about 12 hours to extinguish. That's a heck of a vacuum cleaner. I'm guessing an Oreck. To extinguish and injured 7 firefighters. Preliminary findings indicate the fire started in a vacuum cleaner used to clean work sites at the end of a shift and stored in an unoccupied space, the shipyard's public affairs office said in a release. So much in that begs questions. Why would you store it in an occupied space? Most things are stored in unoccupied spaces. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to fit them in the occupied space. But I have suggestions. Top Vacuum Cleaner Service, not a sponsor, has multiple locations around Manatee and Sarasota County. Well over 30 years of experience. And I would think that Top Vacuum Cleaners is the vacuum cleaner of choice for a nuclear submarine. I have no hard data on that. Just a strong intuition and desire for local business to prosper. This is old news that's new news. This is reported on IPS News. It actually was reported, I believe, by, what was that show that used to be on here back around 2005? Oh, yeah, American AM. Trita Parsi came on, talked about it in depth. U.S. rejected 2005 Iranian offer ensuring no nuclear weapons. France and Germany were prepared in spring of 2005 to negotiate on an Iranian proposal to convert all of its enriched uranium to fuel rods, making it impossible to use it for nuclear weapons. But Britain vetoed the deal at the insistence of the United States, according to a new account by former top Iranian nuclear negotiator Syed Hossein Mossadegh, who had led Iran's nuclear negotiating team in 2004 and 2005, makes clear that the reason the offer was rejected was that the George W. administration refused to countenance any Iranian enrichment capability, regardless of the circumstances. That's slightly different than the story that was told years ago here on 1490. Trita Parsi was the foreign affairs expert for Representative Bob Ney, who had a strong interest in Persian affairs. That may be a wrong phrase to use with a congressman. Persian issues. Lots of congressmen are interested in Persian affairs. But anyway, Rafsanjani was the president of Iran at the time, and you may have remembered a thing called Afghanistan and our invasion there. And we seemed pretty darn formidable. We knocked the Taliban right on their heels. We displayed an amazing array of brand new weaponry. Iran looked at that and was like, wow. Wow. Maybe we should try a little rapprochement with the U.S. So they tried three different channels. The State Department, of which at that point Condoleezza Rice, National Security Advisor. Condoleezza Rice was National Security Advisor. Colin Powell was the Secretary of State. And Bob Ney was very close to Karl Rove. So they sent feelers out through the Swedish embassy that they were willing to deal. They sent it through Condoleezza Rice, through her lieutenant, Larry Wilkerson. He has since confirmed. Condoleezza Rice has no memory whatsoever of it. Colin Powell remembers it. He was more concerned with cutting a deal on the North Korean issue, which he was in, you know, butting heads with the neoconservatives in the Bush administration. And Bob Ney, after Trita Parsi, his expert on Persian affairs, looked it over and read it, brought it to Karl Rove. Now, it was an agreement that they would refrain from the issue of enrichment in exchange for being taken off the axis of evil and being on the hit list for regime change. Well, the Bush administration and Dick Cheney, in their hubris, were not really in the mood for that. They figured they had Afghanistan on the run. So what if that Osama bin Laden guy got away? Yeah, it's just one guy. Plus, we had him on the run. And we were ready to go after Iraq. The sort of second string axis of evil. Well, you know how all that happened. Moving on. Drone attacks create terrorist safe havens, warns former CIA official. I'm going to wrap my head around that one. Drone attacks create terrorist safe havens, warns former CIA official. Didn't a drone attack sort of be a non-safe haven? Former top terrorism official at the CIA has warned that President Barack Obama's controversial drone program is far too indiscriminate in hitting targets that could lead to such political instability that it creates terrorist safe havens. Obama increased use of drones to attack suspected Islamic militants in Pakistan, Afghanistan, Somalia, and Yemen became one of the most controversial aspects of his national security policy. He has launched at least 275 strikes in Pakistan alone, a rate of attack that is far higher than his predecessor, George W. Bush. The London-based Bureau of Investigative Journalism estimates up to 830 civilians, including many women and children, might have been killed by the drone attacks in Pakistan, 138 in Yemen, and 57 in Somalia. Hundreds more have been injured. Well, we haven't even gotten to four digits yet. Pretty small numbers. You know, I was listening to an Afghanistan war veteran, disenchanted, multiple deployments, and he goes, you know, we'd go into these houses in the middle of the night, rustle everybody up, get our target, at least who we thought our target was, take them away. He goes, but you know, if there wasn't a terrorist there before, there sure was a terrorist there afterwards. Well, I guess he would know better than me. Israel Prime Minister orders 300 new homes at West Bank settlement. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has ordered the construction of 300 new homes at the Jewish settlement of Beit El in the West Bank. The announcement came hours after Israel's parliament rejected a bill to legalize settlement outposts. Mr. Netanyahu opposed the bill, said he would honor a Supreme Court order to demolish homes on private Palestinian land at the Olpana outpost. You know, if you've ever really looked at a map of where the settlements are, go to the phone line. If you ever really looked at a map of where the settlements are, there's never going to be a Palestinian state. There will never, ever, 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 ever be a Palestinian state. There is no possible way that you can make a country out of the checkerboard that is left of the West Bank. You're live on the air.
Hey, Henry, Charles here. You moved on to Palestine. We were talking about Afghanistan and Iraq and the drone attacks and all that and those making terrorists. I think that the victims of those attacks are far more likely to become insurgents and not terrorists, and I think that that's an important distinction. Terrorists tend to attack civilians indiscriminately, whereas the insurgents are likely to attack people in uniform, and that's an important difference. They see themselves as freedom fighters and that sort of thing, I think with some validity, because, you know, you blew up my house, I get to go shoot at your soldiers. Seems still relatively fair, but just running out and blowing up a marketplace is not as common as attacking people in uniform that they think are directly involved with whatever it was that hurt them.
I think you are very accurate. I was quoting someone, so I was trying to quote him as accurately as I could, and those were his words. But, yeah, I mean, what would you do?
Oh, that's a no-brainer. I'd be the next guy out in the field with a rifle if you blew up my house and, you know, killed people I loved. Or, I mean, even if you didn't, if you just came and, you know, slammed my door down at 3 a.m., that's certainly enough to make people violently angry.
Grabbed your woman, shoved her into a room, you know, even if there was a female interrogator. I have a feeling you probably wouldn't care for that much either.
Yeah, it wouldn't take, you know, you attack people's families and they rightfully want to fight back, especially if you were not part of the problem. And that's always been the issue, is that you can't tell by looking. It's not like they're wearing uniforms. You can't tell by looking. So then you go door to door and you irritate an entire neighborhood overnight.
Wasn't there something in our history, 1774, 1773, where the British could put soldiers in your house and you had to put them up because they said so?
Yeah, but see, it's with a bit of sarcasm, completely different, because now we're the British.
We're the Empire.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, I just thought that language distinction needed to be out there, because everybody who's fighting somebody doesn't make you a terrorist just because you don't agree with our flag.
All right. Well said.
Bye.
Open lines, 941-745-1490. I stand to be corrected. 941-745-1490. Bradley Manning. Somebody else wants to talk. You're live on the air.
Good morning, Henry.
Hello, Lawrence.
How are you this fine morning?
Well, I seem to be doing okay. I've been told over the last few days that my broadcast delivery has suffered, and I understand why.
I don't think so. You're still standing, and I think that's all that counts.
Well,
but that's one man's opinion. Henry, just a question as a caller, and understanding your program and a mindset. You did speak yesterday and talk about the election in Wisconsin.
Yes.
Does that mean that is now off limits and it's on to state issues and things like you're talking about today? Because I've noticed, in light of the huge, devastating blow to the unions, if not the Democratic Party, there is no conversation about that today, only one day later. Could you clear that up for me, sir?
Well, I thought since Matt Rothschild was on the show Tuesday, and he is on the ground there, and he is very much tied into Wisconsin politics. We had pretty good coverage of that. And then the next day, Matt Bruce covered that very well, too. So that was 2 days. And so we moved on to something else the third day.
Okay. Well, I would contend that the enormity of it, the large scale of the defeat and failure of the unions and their leadership, and that card that the Democratic Party was going to play now, is without question, no matter what poll somebody might cite, it's over for Obama, President Obama, and it's very interesting for people like me to listen to how progressives and liberals and Democrats act when they know the party's over, but they're still hanging on. What say to you on that?
Well, I would say that President Obama is still polling rather well in Wisconsin.
Is that the same poll that they said that the Democrat was polling well against the ultimate winner?
I don't believe so.
Oh, but also they did have that kind of polling. Well, I'm either right or
I think you're actually wrong, Lawrence, because towards the end, I noticed when Governor Walker started getting up 4% above his rival,
mm-hmm.
I was sort of surprised at that. And then he inched up a little bit more, and I pretty much thought, pretty much got this thing locked down.
Right. What do you say about San Diego and San Jose that also had elections, whenever that was, Monday or Tuesday?
Probably Tuesday.
And the similar change or referendum change. You have San Jose, which is a very liberal part of California or city, and they did very similar what Governor Walker did in Wisconsin.
And what was the question that they voted on?
Government union paying for part of their benefits. You'll shoot the messenger, but check the message. That's all I'm pointing out to you.
A recall election versus a pocketbook issue is not exactly the same thing.
Well, how many recounts has the union put forward and been successful?
Well, that's a pretty open-ended question.
Well, the answer is none.
What I think is more interesting is the lack of the Democratic Party support on the recall election.
Very interesting. I would agree with you on that. President Obama didn't even show up.
He tweeted.
Well, that's good. But what I find, and I will hang up so somebody can call in and shoot the messenger, I find it interesting, Henry, how people can still defend and will vote for the guy in light of the abysmal failure and doom that is going to be happening in November. You know, we the right, make fun of people that are doing the tap dancing and the crybabying and all the things that are going on now, but they'll still blindly, like sheep, go vote for the guy. Don't understand it. But
well,
let me explain it
for you.
What's that?
I can explain this for you.
Well, I would enjoy...
We have two choices.
Yes.
In the United States of America. We do have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 choices, which are totally irrelevant. We have two choices that are relevant. And we choose the lesser of two evils.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be choosing the lesser of two evils come November.
I would probably agree with you on that. But to continue to support the loser, the inevitable, obvious loser, and Tuesday is the example of why I'm saying that, to me is mindless. It's like being a village idiot. You know what I mean?
I think you are demonstrating that, Lawrence.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Well, there's some state issues at hand. Bradley Manning defense gets report on WikiLeaks damage to U.S. interests. We'll leave that. H5N1 bird flu reported in northwest China. That's of great relevance, I think, to us. And Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn demonstrated again why he is the mayor of Tampa Bay. Crunching policy one moment and cracking jokes the next. Congresswoman Kathy Castor made the case for MacDill Air Force Base to serve as home of the Air Force's future refueling aircraft. Castor COS Clay Phillips was more than helpful introducing us around the room. Pleasantly surprised to learn how many St. Petersburg Sunburn fans there are. By the way, this is courtesy of Peter Schorsch's Sunburn. Such as Senator Bill Nelson's right hand, Peter Mitchell, that are in the Capitol, U.S. Representative John Micah, Pat Rooney were in attendance, as one of the FAVE's U.S. Representative, Dennis Ross, and his hardworking staff. And, of course, they all feel that we should get the refilling, fueling contract here. Big surprise there. You're live on the air.
Say, Henry, the recall in Wisconsin wasn't a total disaster for unions and Democrats. The Democrats now control the Senate in Wisconsin, and last summer out of 9 recall elections, they prevailed in 5 of those. So it's not been a total disaster for those folks up there. Thanks.
All right, thank you. And let's see what else we can get here done. Raising more Florida money than President Obama and Newt Gingrich combined. Well, that, what's that, like 10 plus 2 cents? Mitt Romney appears to hold a financial advantage heading into the fall election, writes Kendrick Ward. Romney drummed up $7,800,000 and change compared with Obama's $5,800,000 and change. Add Gingrich's $1.4 million, and Romney is still the cash king. In Jacksonville, Romney outraged Obama, $865,000 to $250,000. In Naples, the Republican held a $565,000 to $181,000 advantage. Naples, I don't think, is a great surprise on that. But in the Democratic enclave of West Palm Beach, Boca Raton, Romney also bested Obama, raising a whopping $1.6 million to Obama's $745,000. Obama's heaviest donations came in Miami-Dade and Orlando, where he raked in $1.4 million and $652,000, respectively. Marco Rubio in the news. Marco Rubio, quoting with great import and gravitas, but I would rather go to a phone line. You're live on the air.
Hi, Henry.
Hello.
It's Mary.
Yes.
I just had to answer Lawrence. I just wanted to say I'm the village idiot that, yes, I'm going to still vote for Obama, even though he's absolutely, because Lawrence has a magic ball, a glass ball, and knows these things. He's absolutely going to lose, and I'm still going to fight for him and vote for him. However, he thinks that I should. I have two choices. At one side, that I think might sow some benefits towards me and my people, and the other side that I think is going to squash me. And if I were smart and saw that my side might be losing, I'd quickly run to the other side and support it. And in doing that, that would be smart. That's being the village idiot. That's all I have to say.
Well, Mary.
Yes.
Wouldn't you want to be squashed by the winner?
No, I don't pretend. particularly want to be. That's what the whole fight is about. I don't think Lawrence thinks it's a game. But to me, it's not a game. To me, it's my lifestyle, and that lifestyle that I can pass on to my children.
And actually, your children's children, because most likely we are going to get quite a few U.S. Supreme Court nominees that will shape this country quite a bit.
For a long, long time. Maybe permanently. We may permanently become a third world country.
Right.
I see that as a real possibility. Okay.
All right, thanks, Mary.
Thanks for the time.
You're live on the air.
I see Mary is a sore loser.
I still have trouble getting around that. Jeb Bush endorses Connie Mack. Jeb Bush on Wednesday endorsed U.S. Representative Connie Mack in the U.S. Senate race. Got to that dance early, didn't you, Jeb? Connie Mack is the principal conservative that people of Florida deserve representing them in the U.S. Senate, Bush said in a statement. Connie has the courage, conservative values, experience, and determination to confront the tough issues facing our nation. We must return conservatives to the majority in the U.S. Senate. Connie is a person Floridians need in Washington, working with those Los Angeles socialites that he and his hot wife party with on a frequent basis, and will give us a little bit of the rub of some glamour here in the state of Florida. So says Jeb Bush. I was going to give Marco Rubio his time. Our community values entrepreneurship and small business more than his Hispanic community. Unfortunately, President Obama's failed policies of new regulations, higher taxes. You know, if you have a health care reform, if you have financial reform, of course you have more regulations. You're putting back in place what used to be there. Unfortunately, President Obama's failed policy of new regulations, higher taxes, Obamacare, and his anti-business rhetoric have hit Hispanics especially hard. Big government really hurts those who are trying to make it. By the way, have you seen the, everybody wants to hit Obama with Solyndra? What about those companies that Mitt Romney, as governor, touted when he was governor of Massachusetts that have failed now? All right, well, we're out of time, so let us get to our theme music. And tomorrow, I believe Jim Delgado is in the studio, and we will have a Jim Delgado Friday. And stay tuned for whatever comes next on 1490 WWPR.